it's being sold to the voters as treatment, but you've got $2 billion going into housing that can be for people who are still using hard drugs. If you have a building with, let's say, 40 units and 15 of the people in them are addicted to hard drugs, that is going to have an impact on the community. And the community has no say in that land use at all. That's in Prop 1.
My guest today is Susan Shelley, columnist at Southern California News Group. Proposition 1 passed barely in California. Susan's going to tell us what are the impacts of Prop 1 and will it cause tax increases in California?
If someone wants to do hard drugs in the free housing, they have every right to do so in California. We're not differentiating between people who are making a choice to use drugs on the street and people who are domestic violence victims and are on the street. Everybody's entitled to the free housing equally. And to wait until people are arrested and are jailed, and that's where they receive mental health services, that's a terrible policy. The Los Angeles County jails are the largest mental health hospital system in the nation. That's appalling. That's not worthy of the state of California.
I'm Siamak Kurami. Welcome to California Insider. Susan, it's great to have you back on. Welcome back.
Thank you, Siamak. It's great to be here.
We want to talk to you about Prop 1, and you're someone that has studied it in depth. Prop 1 just passed, barely, and this is an initiative that's supposed to help the homeless, in a sense, like mentally ill people. There was these institutions that we closed in California in the 70s, and people argue that people were dropped into the streets, some ended up in jail, and this proposition is to help the mentally ill. Can you tell us what this is about?
Certainly. Well, the first thing any politician today wants to do is blame Governor Reagan in the 1970s, but it's not Governor Reagan's fault what has happened, and that was a long time ago. What has happened is that in 1965, there was a change to the law, the Medicare and Medicaid Act, and they decided not to have matching funds for mental health care in large institutions. So that's what caused the defunding of the large mental health hospitals. And we're still in that situation today. Prop 1 was said to be the latest effort to create community mental health services, treatment beds for people with behavioral health issues and mental health issues. And also, there's a component of it for housing to try and get people off the streets. So that all sounds great. So what's wrong with it? Well, what's wrong with it is it's a $6.38 billion bond, which means borrowed money, which when you pay it back after 30 years, it's going to cost taxpayers $10 billion, $12 billion. And what is it buying? It's buying about 11,000 beds for $12 billion. So even if the intentions are fine, the math is very troubling. What the bond is for is to build what the legislative analysts call places for treatment, to be named later, to be specified by the state at some future date. So where are they? What are they? How many people do they serve? Nobody knows yet. $4.38 billion of the bond is for that, places for treatment. $2 billion of it is for housing. What kind of housing? Project Home Key housing. The money is going into the same program that has been buying old hotels or even newer hotels and converting them to housing for the homeless with optional services sort of down the hall, wraparound services that are not mandatory because under California law, we have a housing first policy. No one can be rejected as an applicant for this housing based on the fact that they're still using hard drugs. Well, it's being sold to the voters as treatment, but you've got $2 billion going into housing that can be for people who are still using hard drugs. And the outcomes from Project Home Key, do we have any documentation? There's certainly no anecdotal evidence out there that this is working or that this is successful. We've been doing this since the pandemic, first Project Room Key, then converted to Project Home Key, where the hotels were actually purchased and turned into permanent housing by the state and the counties. So that's what it does. And $1 billion of that $2 billion for housing is reserved for veteran housing. But this is not the first time that the voters have been sold a bond measure for veteran housing. It doesn't seem to happen, at least not in the numbers that are promised. And why is that? Every time they do one of these things, Prop 1 included, they say that all of these projects have to be built with labor that's paid the prevailing wage. So that means union labor at the highest possible rate in the whole known universe. Prevailing wage is much more expensive than market wages for a market type of project. And that means that your money doesn't go very far. So you're taxing people to do these projects. You're spending too much to buy these hotels, to refurbish these hotels. You're putting people in them who are not in a sobriety program and can't be required to be in a sobriety program. Is it any surprise that we have terrible outcomes from this and that it's not working? That's what Prop 1 does. There's a second component of Prop 1 that takes money away from the counties for mental health services programs. This is concerning. There was a tax passed in 2004, Proposition 63. It's called the Millionaire's Tax, also called the Mental Health Services Act. And it's a 1% tax on incomes over $1 million in California. The money was supposed to go to the counties, 95% of the money to the counties, 5% to the state, and it was to be used for new and innovative mental health services. Well, this takes away an extra 5%, so now the state will take 10% of that tax revenue. And of the money that's left, the counties are required to spend 30% of their money on these project home key types of housing projects. When they do that, they lose the federal matching funds that they were receiving for providing health care services, mental health services in a community setting. So the counties are hit very hard by this. And I think you're going to see tax increases on the ballot up and down the state in November to try to replace the funding for things like suicide prevention programs and really important mental health services. So you stop the funding for these current services for current clients. You start this project of deciding what you're going to build and where you're going to build it and who's going to get the grant to build it. Who knows how long it will be before they cut the ribbon on the first one of these places that they're building or the housing that they're trying to build in old hotels. It's not well thought out. It's a typical political deal, something for this one and something for that one. One thing that should concern everybody in California, I think, is that in the law, in the Prop 1 law, all of these projects can be built by right. All of these housing projects can be built by right in any community that's zoned for multifamily or retail or anything except single-family neighborhoods.
So they can be built anywhere.
Right. If you can build a duplex under the zoning rules, you can build one of these homeless housing projects. So now you have a situation where the local government has no say at all in what is built where. And you can have these housing projects for people who are still using hard drugs put in any community by right, and the community has no input at all. They must be approved ministerially, meaning rubber stamp, and streamlined, meaning fast. And so I think in a lot of communities there will be an impact from that, because if you have a building with, let's say, 40 units and 15 of the people in them are addicted to hard drugs, that is going to have an impact on the community in terms of drug dealers coming to the neighborhood and perhaps petty theft and other things. And the community has no say in that land use at all. That's in Prop 1.
Now, you mentioned most of this money is going to housing or beds. We are promised, if you look at the proposition, you know, the way it's written or the way it's sold is that we're promised that this is going to give beds to mentally ill people. It's going to help them instead of putting them in jail. This is the right solution. It's common sense and compassion combined. Is there any component in terms of helping the people get on treatment? Because from what it sounds like, what you're explaining is more infrastructure.
Well, a bond has to be used for, it can't be used for services or salaries. Bond money has to be used for buildings, essentially. So they're going to give, I think the way it's structured is Department of Health in California will make grants with this bond money. They're going to borrow the money, and then they're going to make grants to go and build these places for treatment, which will be decided later. So we don't know what they are. In the voter guide itself, the legislative analyst just called them places and said the state will decide down the road what they're going to be and where. So we just don't know.
You mentioned there is a percentage that is getting away from counties. Where is that going now?
Well, it's currently going to programs in each county that are decided at the local level. So in every county, it'll be different. But there are things like suicide prevention and peer-to-peer counseling and different kinds of interventions that keep people from becoming homeless and that help people in situations with mental health stresses. And so that's very important also. And to take that money away and put it into hotel refurbishment, it's very burdensome for counties to lose that funding. And then when these so-called places are built, guess who has to pay to operate them? Because the bond money can't be used to operate them. The counties have to use their money to operate them. So the counties lose several different ways. They lose a share of the Prop 63 money to the state. It was 5%, now it's going to be 10%. They have to spend 30% of their services funding on these housing projects. They lose the federal matching funds from that 30% because the federal government doesn't match housing, they only match healthcare. And then they have to spend their funds to operate these treatment places that the state will eventually decide to build. So it's very burdensome.
So counties will end up operating these treatment centers?
Counties have to pay to operate these treatment centers.
In terms of treatment, you mentioned that there's these beds, they're going to put these beds and they're going to create a project room key to give more housing to people.
Right.
We have been doing that in California. We've spent $15 billion on housing and a lot of money in LA to build housing, but it hasn't really actually achieved any results in terms of lowering the number of homeless.
This is true. Now, Prop 1 promises 6,800 treatment beds and about 4,300 housing beds. So the treatment beds people are not in long term. So that will 6,800 beds, but it'll service more people than that because people are going to cycle in and out. The money that's been spent on homelessness so far has not produced the results that everyone hoped to see. And it's starting to catch up with some of these politicians. There's a lawsuit in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Alliance for Human Rights, I think is the name of the group. They sued the city and the county, and they said, people are living on the sidewalks. You're not providing housing or shelter or anything. We're suing you to make you do that and to return the sidewalks to their intended purpose. This was filed, I think, around 2018. It was settled in 2022. The city has not lived up to the settlement. So the LA Alliance went back to court. And they said, we want a $6.4 million penalty because they are not producing the reports and the documentation and meeting the targets and the deadlines. They are not living up to the settlement. So they're back in court with Judge David Carter, who is the Orange County judge who oversaw the Santa Ana River encampment situation. So he's overseeing this lawsuit. And he has just ordered an audit of all of Los Angeles's homelessness spending, I think going far back. He says that they have spent $600 million before Mayor Karen Bass was elected. And right now in the current budget, there's $250 million more for this Inside Safe, which is what she calls her homelessness program, which is another variation of Project Room Key, Project Home Key, putting people in hotels, motels. It's extremely expensive, very expensive to do this. And the services are optional. So there's no compulsion in any of this except to the taxpayer. The taxpayers have to pay, and they don't get any choice. But everybody else, it's optional. So it's not a sustainable model. There will never really be enough money to build a studio apartment with services for every person who decides to live on the streets in Los Angeles or who is in a bad situation and winds up on the streets in Los Angeles. We're not differentiating between people who are making a choice to use drugs on the street and people who are domestic violence victims and are on the street. We're not making a choice. We're not making a distinction there. Everybody's entitled to the free housing equally, as fast as we can build it, but we can't build it fast enough. So where are they? Well, we're paying to put people in hotels. They don't want to build shelters. They don't like the idea of temporary shelters. In Los Angeles government, in California government generally. Activists don't like the idea of shelters. So they want studio apartments.
Why is that?
That's a good question. I don't know why that is. The cynic in me would say that there's no money in it and the money is in the contract to build the housing and to be the nonprofit that operates the services at the housing. There's a lot of money in that, a lot of money. In fact, a company called Shangri-La Industries, which got a number of these contracts to build, I think $114 million in contracts, it might be more than that, to build hotels turned into housing.
In Los Angeles, recently.
In Los Angeles, also in, I think, in Redlands, in San Bernardino, Southern California. I think one in Orange County. They got a big contract, and a lot of these places never opened, and now there's litigation over potential embezzlement charges, where the CFO is accused of spending this money on a Ferrari and a Bentley and a lease for a Beverly Hills house because, you know, the cars shouldn't have to live on the street. This is very rough when you see that kind of thing with public money being just abused that way. And even when it's not abused that way, all of these nonprofit organizations, non-governmental organizations, service provider organizations, they have big staffs with big salaries. And so does the Los Angeles Housing Services Authority, which manages, I think, an $800 million budget at last count, or $850 million budget of money for homelessness services. Well, if you take a look at the salaries of what people are making at this agency, and then you take a look at the results, no corporation would run that way. The salaries are six figures, $200,000, $300,000 for some of these positions. Lots of these positions, and where are the results? They're accountable to nobody. They're sort of accountable to everybody. It's a joint powers authority, county and city in Los Angeles, but they're really kind of accountable to nobody.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about VyRefi for a while now. VyRefi has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at YRefi and then tell them Siamak Karami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview. Now, Susan, when we were looking at Prop 1 and we were reporting on it, we realized that there was about $16 million of funding for Prop 1, and there was $1,000
you mean
of
the
funding
campaign,
against
the
in the campaign.
Funding, yes.
And then in the last day, as it was very close, like it was about to be 50-50, or but it was not going to make it in the last few days, Friday before the election was on Tuesday, one of our reporters saw that there's $10 million that went into the campaign of for it, so it became like $26 million
on the last day
and the last few days. What made us wonder is, who are the people that are putting this money? What comes out of this kind of funding?
Well, if you look at the list of campaign donors, it's the same list that donate to Governor Gavin Newsom for everything. This was organized as Governor Newsom's ballot measure. The name of the proponent on your voter guide was Governor Newsom's Ballot Measure Committee. And, you know, in California, we have a pay-to-play culture in politics. And if you want your phone call returned, if you want your bill signed, if you want your competitors squashed by a new regulation, you better donate when the governor asks. And that's who donated. All of the unions, all of the regulated entities in California, a bunch of businesses, people who have business before the state donated. And in particular, the construction unions donated heavily to Prop 1 because they're going to get this prevailing wage requirement to build all these places, so that's jobs for the union members, because they are excluding any kind of non-union labor or lower cost workers from that. So they donated heavily. All of the health insurance companies and the health providers and the hospital organizations, they all donated. They will get contracts to operate these places. So it's a combination of people who are getting something out of this measure and people who just need the governor's favor in general.
You mentioned that some of these nonprofits have done some questionable approaches and they're paying people a lot. And there are some that have actually, there's money that has gone to buying Ferrari and Bentley out of the homeless people, the money that we dedicated to the homeless people. And what is there in this proposition to make sure that this money doesn't get spent like that?
Well, they say there's oversight. So what's the oversight? There are two commissions, one to oversee mental health services, one to oversee behavioral health services. I think there's about 18 or 20 appointees on each commission. They are all appointed by political officials. So the governor appoints some, the legislature appoints some, the superintendent of education gets a couple of appointments, the attorney general gets a couple of appointments. And what do these things, what do these commissions do, these oversight commissions? Well, they approve the contracts. So there again, it's, if you want to be very cynical, and it's been my experience that you can't be too cynical, it becomes a way to generate campaign contributions for all of these different politicians. It's like, if you want to donate, I can get you an appointment to a commission and you can
approve the contract.
Yeah, you can approve contracts and that might work out very well for everybody. That's just sort of pay to play. It's legal, but it's not what most people would think of as oversight. There are no slots for taxpayer advocates, for instance, or CPA.
Or experts,
or
right?
Experts,
there needs to be some experts that actually know the mental health.
I think they do categorize some of the appointments as being experts, but there aren't any financial experts. You know, there aren't any people who are, if you were doing an audit, you would bring in people who were auditors, who knew accounting, who could spot fraud. Those are not the people who are appointed. The people who are going to be appointed are people who want different kinds of services funded, and they will be approving the contracts.
Now, you mentioned that some of the counties are going to end up having tax increases.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that?
Well, if you take away the services, if you take away the money for services that the counties are providing, and the counties want to put a tax increase on the ballot to replace that money, here's what that's going to look like on your ballot. We don't have funding for suicide prevention programs for firefighters. That's what that's going to look like on your ballot, just as an example. It's going to sound extremely important, and it is extremely important. Now, they could take money from somewhere else and spend it on suicide prevention programs, but they don't want to do that. They want to take the money you already pay and spend it on something you would never vote for, and then they want to come to you for a tax increase. That's the game. Now, there's going to be right now, circulating for signatures, there is a new tax increase in Los Angeles County, which will double the sales tax that was in Measure H. Measure H was passed, I think, in 2017, and it was a quarter-cent sales tax for homelessness services. It was augmenting a $1.2 billion bond in Los Angeles for homeless housing. The housing bond couldn't be used for services, because you can't use bond money for salaries. So the sales tax increase in Measure H was for the salaries. And boy, did they have a job fair. And did they hire a lot of bureaucrats and administrators and directors and officials. And how's that working out for everybody? Not too well. The situation is worse than ever in Los Angeles. So what do they want to do? They want to double the tax and take off the sunset date because it was a 10-year temporary tax, a quarter cent sales tax increase.
This was the one that was supposed to build housing, and then we heard that the housing was at $800,000.
That was proposition or measure HHH.
And this was the services.
City of Los Angeles. This was a services tax from the county of Los Angeles. This was measure
to operate those, or no? It's just separate.
Just services.
Just services for the homeless.
For the homeless, and just broadly services, and in the whole county. But it's ending. And we never let a tax end, do we? So there's no such thing as a temporary tax. This measure that's now circulating for signatures would make it permanent and double it. And this was enabled by legislation that the governor signed last fall, because we're already over the cap in Southern California. We're over the cap, which is supposed to be maximum 2% of local sales taxes on top of the state sales tax, which is 7.25%. So that would mean, by law, you can't pay a sales tax of more than 9.25% in California, in anywhere. What they do is pass special laws to exceed it for different purposes. So we just had another one of those. I think there are 40 or 44 cities in LA County that are already at 10.25%, and they could go to 10.75%. And I watched one of the hearings when they were considering this legislation, and someone asked a question, well, how high is the sales tax now? And no one knew. They're voting on this, no one knew how high the sales tax is. The legislature was voting on this bill, which
and they had no idea what's
this. They were voting on it, but they didn't know how high it was already. But they, you know, the county wanted to raise it, so the legislature went along with it. Sure, go ahead, put it before the voters. So that's what's happening. Now, here's the really tricky part. A tax for a special purpose like this, under the state constitution, needs a two-thirds vote. But in 2017, there was a decision by the state Supreme Court called California Cannabis Coalition versus City of Upland, which had some squishy language in it and suggested that if a tax increase was put on the ballot by a citizen's initiative, and not by the city council or the county board of supervisors, but by a citizen's initiative, a citizen's tax increase, maybe the Constitution doesn't apply. Now, they didn't exactly decide that, but they left the question ambiguous. So it was tested. It was tested in San Francisco the very next year, and San Francisco decided to, the Board of Supervisors, one of the supervisors in the government in San Francisco, essentially stepped out to the sidewalk with a clipboard and said, aha, I'm a citizen now, let's pass a special tax to fund childcare and early education. It'll be a tax on commercial real estate leases. If we do it inside the building, then that's going to need a two-thirds vote. But if we do it out here on the sidewalk with petitions, it will pass with a simple majority. So it passes with a simple majority just barely. And it's challenged in court. And the appellate court said, yeah, fine. So now it's a special tax for a specific purpose, a tax increase for a specific purpose passed with a simple majority. And this has happened up and down the state ever since. And this latest one in Los Angeles, they're out on the sidewalks. This is the government, but it's the government with all of its allies in labor and these non-governmental organizations. And they are putting this all together for a tax increase for homelessness to double the Measure H sales tax and extend it forever. No sunset date.
So do you think this is going to be a pattern now that some of the Prop 1 money, this money will get taken away from the counties? Do you think there's going to be a lot more of these citizen initiatives,
Citizen initiatives. Yes, I do think that. And they discussed this openly in Sacramento, that there are different ways to pass things now. There's an option. You have different signature thresholds. If you do it with signatures or if you do it in the city council. They're just exploiting this loophole. Now, taxpayers have tried to strike back at this and close the loophole. So the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association has been part of a coalition with interests in the business community to close this loophole. And they have qualified for the November ballot a measure that closes the loophole. It says a special tax needs a two-thirds vote. A local tax for a special purpose needs a two-thirds vote, no matter how it gets on the ballot, no matter if it's the city council or the county board of supervisors or a citizen's initiative or Elon Musk shoots it onto the ballot with a rocket. It doesn't matter. It needs a two-thirds vote. That's not the rocket part, but the rest of it is in the Taxpayer Protection Act. So the government doesn't care for this at all. And the legislature and the governor have actually filed a lawsuit, an original writ in the state Supreme Court, to have this removed from the ballot before voters have a chance to vote on it. There you go. How's that for the defenders of democracy? They don't want the voters to vote on a duly qualified initiative that will protect taxpayers. It's called the Taxpayer Protection and Government Accountability Act.
They don't want the voters to decide.
They don't want the voters to have the option to approve taxpayer protection or government accountability. So they are suing to have it taken off the ballot. And it's in the state Supreme Court. We'll have a decision by June 27th. That's the deadline for the Secretary of State when she has to know what's on the ballot, what's not. June 27th is the date she cited.
Before we continue, we would like to thank Shen Yun for sponsoring this channel. It takes you back in time to magical world of ancient China with a unique blend of brilliant dancing, beautiful costumes, and legends coming to life. Go to shenyun.com to find out the schedule and theater information. It's a lifetime experience you don't want to miss.
Just so inspiring. It makes me want to go dance.
Breathtaking.
I was very impressed.
I'm taking my program and I'm going to mention it on the news because I think it's a great performance and people should see it.
What I loved about the show was the authenticity of it. It was taking me on a journey.
Exceptional. The technique involved that. The thousands of hours of training.
People just float.
Everything was exact and then they worked to the exact moment and it was beautiful.
You go away feeling with a smile in your heart from it.
Have to come. Life-changing.
Make sure you see it. Make sure you see it.
Don't wait. Don't get your tickets wait. Now.
Some of the residents, you know, people that have been paying these taxes, a lot of times people in LA, they say, okay, you know, fine, we'll pay the tax so we can help the people that are homeless in the streets. We will pay for it. But it seems like it's gotten to a point where we're paying for it, but then we're not seeing much of the results, and then we have to pay more.
That's exactly what's happening. The policies don't work. And the policies don't work because they're on the wrong premise. You know, when you're on the wrong premise, you get the opposite of what you intend. So the premise is that people are only on the streets because they don't have an apartment. And if you give them an apartment, then everything will magically improve and everybody will get their lives together and be productive citizens. And this is a false premise because people are not always on the street just because of poverty. Those people can be helped and are helped. But many people who are on the street have challenges that are not fixed with apartments. If you really want to solve homelessness, what you have to do is build short-term and long-term shelters and then enforce an anti-camping ordinance. Because it's not safe for people to be on the sidewalks, living on the sidewalks. It's not safe. It's obviously not safe. It violates every health and safety principle that we've known about since the first government in the caveman days. You can't have people just living on the streets, no plumbing, no nothing. This is absolutely unsafe. We have situations where streetlights are being destroyed because people are tapping into the electricity. So we don't have streetlights because we have people living on the sidewalks.
And the danger of somebody getting electrical shock like from touching those
and
things.
And disease and violence and crime where the homeless are the victims. How many people were, I think I just heard that 40 people in the city of Los Angeles who were homeless were murdered in the last year. Well, that's not good. That's not safe. That's not a policy that's good for anybody. There is no civil right to die on the sidewalk. That's just appalling. And to wait until people are arrested and are jailed, and that's where they receive mental health services, that's a terrible policy. The Los Angeles County jails are the largest mental health hospital system in the nation. That's appalling. That's not worthy of the state of California. That's appalling. So what do we need? We need short-term and long-term shelters to get people off the street. We need to repeal this Housing First law, which dates to 2015 or 2016, where we said that we have to give housing to people even if they're still using hard drugs with no conditions. That is not,
started in 2015, 2016.
2015 or 2016. And it's based on a false story that in Utah, they reduced their chronic homelessness by 90%. With a Housing First policy, but that's not true. What was actually going on there is they changed the way they were calculating it, the way they were counting it. They changed the definition of chronic homelessness, and that's how they got a 90% reduction. It wasn't Housing First. But in the meantime, we've put this into California law. Holly Mitchell, who was then in the state Senate and is now on the County Board of Supervisors, she wrote it. She sponsored it. She stands by it today as a success. It's not a success. You have a scarce number of units of housing. And who should receive that housing? Random? Just make it a lottery? Or make that housing available to the people who are ready to get well, who have the best opportunity to succeed, who can be in that housing temporarily, get their lives together, and move forward. Wouldn't that be a more successful policy? Well, we don't do it that way. We don't do it that way. We have housing first. If someone wants to do hard drugs in the free housing, they have every right to do so in California. And that is unfair to the taxpayers. It doesn't help the people involved. It just creates a situation where people are overdosing alone in their apartments in many cases. It's appalling. And the third thing we need, repeal housing first, build shelters and enforce anti-camping. And the third thing we need is hospitals, because some people need medical care. And they're not going to get it in a community setting. They need medical care in a hospital. And if we were to ask the federal government for a waiver from the ban on matching funds in large facilities, we can get a waiver. That started under the Trump administration when Dr. Ben Carson was the Secretary of Health and Human Services, a new program where states can ask for a waiver from the ban on matching funds for mental health care provided in a large facility, more than 16 beds. Because currently, from the 1965 law, there's a ban on reimbursement from the federal government if the facility has more than 16 beds. So what are we doing? We're building all these facilities that have 16 beds or fewer, which is very expensive, good for the construction workers.
Not efficient, right?
Not efficient. We need hospitals, not for everybody, and it doesn't have to be compulsory treatment for everybody, but we need hospitals. So we have to get a waiver so that we can get the matching funds, so that we can build the hospitals, so we can staff them appropriately, so we can provide people the medical care that they deserve to have, so they're not on the street. And there are different components to the homelessness problem, and they all have to be addressed logically and rationally, and not with campaign donations to do things that are good for the people who are making the campaign donation, which is what we're doing now. It's just pay-to-play politics, writ large, billions of dollars, and it's not going to solve the problem, but we're going to have to pay back that money anyway.
So, Susan, for people that are watching California, and, you know, when I came here and a lot of people around the world, they look at California and they see this state that is truly the hope for the rest of the world in terms of innovation, in terms of the culture, diversity, all that we do here. How is it possible that we are not solving these problems? And what does it take for California to fix this side of things? While we've innovated so many things in the world for the last few decades, many decades.
Well, I think whenever you need to solve a problem, you have to look at what's causing it. And we're not doing that. We're saying that it's the cost of housing that caused homelessness. But that's not really true. The cost of housing is a factor that affects everybody. But the cost of housing doesn't make you live in a tent on the street. Live in a tent on the street, that's a separate kind of situation. And until politicians are ready to look honestly at these situations that are causing people to want to live on the street or to refuse to accept services, until they're willing to look at that and then balance what these individuals want with what the community wants, which they do all the time. Until they're willing to make that balance and make some hard decisions in defense of the community's rights, I don't think it's going to change. You know, people are monetizing this situation. They're exploiting the people who are on the street, and they're damaging the businesses that are trying to operate. They're damaging the residents. They're damaging everything from the, you know, as we talked about with the streetlights, we have damage from the streetlights and we have damage to our businesses, which are leaving and can't operate. And then you have this whole safety concern because some people are violent and it's dangerous to have people wandering around on the streets who are violent, and to say that that's their civil right to live on the street and that's fine, and not to let the police take any action until you actually have the blood on the sidewalk from the violent incident. That's when the police can get involved. And otherwise, social workers and everybody just waits till people are, quote, ready to accept services. Well, there's no other area where the law is enforced that way. You know, if you park your car for an hour too long at a meter, they're not interested in why you need to do that. They're not interested in your opinion. That's going to cost you $70 or whatever it is now for a parking ticket. And every other law is enforced except these laws for health and safety. And part of that is the Supreme Court that has done that with the Martin versus, well, it's not the Supreme Court itself, it was the Ninth Circuit that ruled in a case called Martin versus Boise that cities could not enforce an anti-camping ordinance unless they had enough shelter beds for everyone. Now, cities can build shelters, but they won't. They want to build apartments because that's where the money is, so that's what's happening. They're not building shelters. They're not allowed to enforce an anti-camping ordinance. They can get sued all the time for enforcing an anti-camping ordinance. But the Supreme Court has taken a case out of Oregon, which they will decide, I believe, by the end of June of this year, that could overturn the Martin versus Boise decision and allow cities to enforce an anti-camping ordinance again. So we'll see how that works out, because that would remove the excuse that politicians have in California for never enforcing.
Now, what about Californians, Susan? What do you recommend to Californians that are wondering what's going on? They've been paying the taxes, they've been supporting the state leaders to do whatever they need, but they see these problems getting worse and worse.
Well, my recommendation is vote no on the tax increases. You know, stop the money flow to these terrible programs which are monetizing the pain of people on the streets. Stop the money flow and insist on better solutions. I think that's important, because if you just, you know, Proposition 1 was expected to pass easily, because, as you pointed out, 20-some million dollars spent in the campaign for it, zero essentially spent against it. It had the governor's face, the television commercials. It's a problem that ranks high on everybody's list of things that need fixing, and it almost failed. It almost failed. They counted for 2 weeks, and they were chasing down signatures that needed to be corrected so the ballots would count, missing signatures on ballot envelopes, and tracking down those voters to get them to sign a form so their ballot could be counted. That's how close it was. So voters are skeptical, as they should be at this point, because year after year we're seeing tens and hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars put toward these failed policies. We have to get a handle on what works. We have to see outcomes. We have to have evidence-based policy. And we have to stop funding the same policies that are failing, because if we fund them, they'll never change.
Do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
Join the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association at hjta.org, because that's really the best organization looking out for taxpayers in California. So be a member and strengthen the voice of taxpayers in California. It's a great organization. I'm proud to be associated with it.
Susan Shelley, columnist with Southern California News Group and also Vice President of Communications with Howard Jarvis Association. It was really great to have you on California Insider.
Thank you, CMAC. It's always great to be with you.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're gonna come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below, because you want to sign up on our newsletter, because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it. Thank you.